So glad to be with you. My name is Dwight, one of the pastors here at Church 21. And I'm just going to do a little bit of housekeeping because today there's a big parade that's going to be happening outside. And there are going to be maybe people screaming. I don't know. There'll be lots of bass. There'll be all kinds of things. And we're just going to stay laser focused. My wife says that I have a gift. I don't know if it's a gift, but kids will be screaming all around me. We have four little kids, right? They'll be yelling, and I will calmly read a book or take a nap, right? And so be like Dwight today, right? Don't take a nap, but focus, all right? And it's just probably going to be loud. What's fascinating, though, is what's happening outside is a result of something that happened 1,600-ish years ago where this guy, Patrick, who was enslaved, broke away from those who had him in slavery. And then he went back to those people and he evangelized them. And the Celtic people became a Christian people. And multitudes were rescued because of this revival that swept across Ireland. So much so that years later, we're still celebrating it. Now, we're celebrating it with like green beer and eggs, but nonetheless, it's still being celebrated. We've got off point. But what God did in Ireland years and years ago, we're still talking about today. And so we're praying that something like that would happen in Montreal and that it wouldn't stop, that for hundreds of years there would be a party in the streets because of who Jesus is and what he's doing. So let me pray and we'll get after this. Jesus, thank you so much that you are here, that you are with us. Thank you that you did a fantastic work through that normal, ordinary man, Patrick, and you supernaturally used him to see a whole people group, a people group who seems so far from you and far from ever submitting to you. In droves, people came to worship you and love you and serve you. And that work is continuing on today. And so thank you so much for the work that you have been up to and that you're continuing. Thank you that the same God that was at work in Ireland is here with us this morning. Thank you that you're in our presence and that we get to be in your presence. Thank you, and I pray for focus and for attention for all of us. There's so many opportunities to divert other places. Help us hone in. We love you. Amen. All right, have you heard the phrase, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight? Yes, all right, affirmation. I love it. Some people just look at me like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Good. All right, so you heard that. It's good advice. It's wisdom. Like, if you show up for a fight with someone that says, never happened to me, and you have a little, unless you're a ninja, which probably none of you are, and you show up a little knife, and someone else has a gun pointed that way, like kill shot, date night style, you're going down, right? You have no hope. And this is what this text is actually speaking about, the one that Henry read. It's creation provoking the creator. Creation showing up to a fight with her creator with a knife in her hand against all the power that has ever been. And here's the thing. What we're going to see this morning in this text is that the creator actually shows up to this fight. The creator comes. And so what we're going to be looking at this morning is the end of history. So if we're looking at the end of history, I knew that so many of you got up on March 19th hoping for a history lesson, so that's what I'm going to do for you briefly this morning. We believe this. We believe that there is a God that has no beginning and has no end, that he is a God who is unchanging as well, that who he was in infinity past is the same that he'll be in infinity future, that he is unchanging, eternal, and that he exists as one God in three persons, yet one God. And you're like, that doesn't make sense. Three gods, you mean, Dwight? No, I don't mean that. One God who exists as three persons, yet one God. The greatest theologians, some of the smartest people who have ever lived, say that it's simple enough for a child to understand this, but complicated enough that if you spend all of your time thinking about this, you will end up going crazy. That our minds can't fully comprehend what that is because nothing in creation can point us to that. It seems like that reality, one God, three persons, yet one God, is something outside of creation. And that's the point. And when we bump up into things like this about God, we have two options that we can do. One, we can say that's not logical. I can't do a science experiment where I have a hypothesis, work through the process, and come out with a conclusion. Therefore, it can't be real. He can't be real. Or we can go on the other side and say, wow, there's something bigger than my little finite mind can comprehend. I'm going to worship him. And those are our two options. That's it. You can worship him or walk away from him. There's no middle ground with him, and we'll see that. But this God one day decided, we're going to, one God, three persons, one God, we're going to create. And they made creation. And this God made us, humanity, as the apex, the pinnacle of that creation, and he made us for life. He didn't make us so that he could watch this sick science experiment take place. He made us for life, that we would have value, meaning, and purpose, that we would find all of our being and life in him, that we would be in relationship with him. In the book of Genesis, first book in the Bible, we're looking at Revelation, the last book this morning, but first book in the Bible, it said that humanity walked with God, right? We walk our dog on a leash. It's annoying. We walked with God. Humanity walked with God. What a privilege. What a privilege. And he would explain things to us about life and how it worked, that we were with him. There was nothing in between us. But one day, we collectively as humanity decided, you know what, we have a better idea. And we were actually deceived into believing this. So imagine this. You get a blender, okay? I don't know why you'd have a blender. Maybe you're super into smoothies. I don't know. You get a blender, or you want St. Patty's drinks, not sure. You get a blender, and in that blender, you open it up, and there's a little manual, and you're like, great, I love reading manuals. You're a nerd if you do. But I love reading manuals, and you start reading it, and then someone knocks on your door, and you're like, oh, that's weird. Maybe they want to come in and enjoy some of my smoothie. I don't know. So you go to the door, and the person says, hey, I saw that you got a blender. And you're like, that's really weird. That's what social media does, but now it's in real life. Okay, you're at my door. You know I bought a blender. Fine. And he says, actually, the manual that was in there isn't as good as my manual. Why don't you take my manual? And you're like, oh, okay. He's like, I have lots of experience in the blender business. Super good at blenders. You're like, great. So you take the first manual, you kind of look at it, you look at the other manual looks awesome, right? This one's kind of black and white. This one has like neon things with smoke somehow coming off of it, and you know, it's not burning. You're like, this is amazing. You open it up and it's like, plug blender in. All right, check. Fill bathtub up. All right, check. I don't know where this is going. Hold blender, jump in. That's not the way I thought this morning was going to go, but why not? What's going to happen? You're going to die. That's right. That's right. I am famous for my camp songs. I'll play the guitar around the campfire, and they all end in a chorus, we're all going to die, right? Super fun going camping with me. Very optimistic. But this is what happened. Humanity was deceived into taking the blender and jumping into the bathtub with it. That instead of following God the way that he created us to find all our life in him and trust him and obey him, we bought into a different plan. We were deceived into that, but we were culprits in it as well because we obeyed the deception. And so ever from that point, there wasn't a literal blender, okay? If you're like, I had read Genesis, I never saw a blender. You need to know Hebrew for fruit. It actually means blend. No, not really. All right? But the idea that when we went after the fruit, we said, this is a fruit that I'm not supposed to have according to that manual, but according to this manual that I'm choosing to believe, this is going to bring me real life. And when we ate of it, our eyes were opened, and we knew that we were naked, we were unashamed, and we hid from one another, we blamed one another, we rejected God in that moment. We said, I have a better idea for life, and death came in. We're really angry about death, but death is our fault. According to the Bible, and you might be here and you say, I don't believe the Bible, Sue. I'm so glad you're here. Long time ago, I didn't believe the Bible is true either. It feels like just the other day. But about 20 years ago, I became a follower of Jesus. Up till that point, I thought it was just fairy tales. And yet what we see in this text is that death came in because of us. But here's the good news, is that this God who made everything also said, I'm going to fix this problem. He saw that we read the wrong manual. He saw that we brought death onto ourselves, and he came and he did something about that. And we're going to look at that in a little bit. And he's coming back again, and that's what this text is all about. And when he comes back again, he's not coming back as little baby Jesus. Cute, we're going to sing, away in the manger, no room for, I don't even remember Christmas lyrics at this time of year, right? I don't remember them anyway, I'm horrible with lyrics. But it's not cute baby Jesus. This is warrior Jesus coming for the final battle. That he's coming in to right every wrong. And when we think about oppressors in this world that are oppressing people and wrongfully killing people and stealing from people and raping and pillaging, we're like, oh, really angry about that. Someone should come and fix this. But something weird happens when we talk about Jesus coming to do it. It's like, oh, I don't like that version of Jesus. I was hoping someone else would come and fix this. But you don't get to pick and choose who you want Jesus to be. This is who he is. And this is the final battle scene. And it's not our first time seeing this either. Revelation we've seen is cyclical. So we've seen this in Revelation 6 and 11 and 14 and 16 and 17 aspects of this battle. But this morning, we're looking at it through the eyes of Jesus. I don't know if you've ever played a video game where, like, I don't play video games, so I'm out of my element here. But, like, you're looking at the entire thing through the lens of some other character. So you see the world through, like, some female fox thing, and you're like, why did you choose that character? I don't know. But you see the world through that. We get to see all of this through Jesus. And he's bringing things to an end. But as Jesus is bringing things to an end, he's starting something new as well. And we're going to look at that in the coming weeks. So let's get right into Revelation chapter 19. Let's get right into it after an 8-minute introduction, okay? Verse 11, John sees this. He said, "Then I saw heaven opened." Then I saw heaven opened. You know what? You can go to Indigo or Chapters and buy weird books about, like, little kids or older people who somehow go into heaven, and they come back and they tell you things, and it's like, well, maybe not, I don't know, but we actually have an accurate account here of what happened, so I don't know if I need those books. Really, I want to be about this book. So I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse, and the one sitting on it called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges and makes war. So in chapter 6, I'm sure you all remember precisely all the points about chapter 6 I preached weeks ago, so I won't bore you with all those. I know you don't. But chapter 6, we got to see the four horsemen. And the first horseman that comes in is on a white horse. And we saw that the horseman on that white horse was coming to conquer and to find conquest in the world. But he was an imitator. He was an imitator. He was coming to destroy what was good. What we see in chapter 19, verse 11, the one on this white horse is the true warrior who's not coming to conquer what is good, but to conquer evil. That this is a true and faithful one. And so this rider, that's his name, Faithful and True. Don't you want a friend like that? Don't you want a friend whose name is Faithful and True? So many of our friends are fickle, aren't they? So many people who are our acquaintances and who say that they're committed to us, when things get really hard, they bail out. Or when they find something better to do, they leave. And yet this one is faithful and true. He always comes through. He's clutch. I don't know if you're a basketball fan or not. I'm not really, but clutch shooters are really fun to watch. When there's a few seconds left, that's when I want to watch a basketball game, right? And you know the guy on the team or the lady on the team is going to get the ball, and they're going to make the final shot. They're the clutch shooter on the team, and because they're probably going to come through. This is Jesus. He's the clutch shooter. He always comes through. He has a good history of always coming through. His resume is one where he always comes through. He's never wavered on requirements. He's shed his blood to make good on his promises. And he has skin in the game, literally. At one point, Jesus did not have flesh. He's existed for all time as a spirit. And yet the incarnation is that carne means flesh, that he came in flesh, that he took on a human body. Imagine being creator saying, okay, I'm going to become like them. That's humiliating in a sense. The positive way is that's humble, but it's humiliating to become like them, to be so low. And yet that's what Jesus did. He didn't count equality with God something to be grasped, but humbled himself. It took the form of a servant by becoming a human. So he comes as a human, and then he goes intentionally to a cross. Jesus wasn't a victim. He wasn't a bystander. He wasn't, crap, I wish that things would have worked out better for Jesus. He came to die. His words. He told his followers, I need to go to Jerusalem so that I can be crucified and rise on the third day. Why did he come to be crucified? Because you and I brought death into the world. He came for the death of death. His death brought a death to death for us. This is good news. This is something far greater than we're going to be celebrating out at the St. Paddy's Day Parade, or Paddy's Day, sorry, wrong enunciation. But he came to be crucified so that we could have our rebellion paid for, that he could remove it completely. And then as he went into the grave, he made a promise before he was put into the grave that I'll rise on the third day. And 3 days later, he gets up and he begins this resurrection. And ever since his day, death has been slowly rotting and the new creation has been growing. And if you're a follower of Jesus, if you submitted to him and said, I need you as my rescuer and as my king, then already what's said of you is new creation. You're already part of the new creation. It's not like there's a bunch of little new creations, like Shannon, new creation, and Evan, new creation, Bailey, new creation. It's that we're collectively part of new creation. We already belong to this thing that Jesus is doing. It's outstanding, absolutely outstanding. And Jesus is now saying, I'm coming back. I'm coming back, and I'm going to bring vindication against all rebellion against me and all evil on this earth. And Jesus is like a sniper, not a bomber. Jesus is like a sniper, not a bomber. With bombs, there's casualties. And it's like, okay, I know that this person's hanging out there. We're going to drop a bomb. But I know that there's going to be casualties and shrapnel and all kinds of nasty stuff. And we just can't help it. That's a really bad side effect of war. But that's not how Jesus rolls. It's not casualties. It's precision. Absolute precision. Listen, in chapter 19, verse 12, his eyes are like a flame of fire, that he has focused omniscience. He knows everything. He knows what's going on in your heart right now. He knows the things that you're struggling with. He knows the things that you're carrying. He knows what you did last summer. You're like, what are you talking about? I know, it's old school, right? But he knows all of that. That's a movie, by the way. Don't watch it, probably, okay? Don't watch it. You'll scream. I'm just on it this morning. No one's following me. We're good, though. Puntastic. All right. But he knows you. He knows you, and he wants to take your judgment. You see, we don't like the idea that, oh, man, Jesus, sniper? I don't like that. It doesn't make me feel good. But we need to remember the flip side of that is Jesus has said, I was already sniped. I was taken out for you. I received the destruction in your place. He wants to take your judgment. Jesus came to die for his enemies. Jesus constantly is offering out surrender. Would you please surrender? You can't win. You can't make it on your own. I've seen your little religious list that you've made. You can't do it well enough to please me, and you can't not do those things that you're trying to stop well enough to please me. You can't be perfect. You can't satisfy what my dad demands, but I did for you. You can't pay your debt, but I did it for you. You're so loved. Doesn't matter what you've done. You're forgiven completely. I took your wrath. Would you take surrender? And I'll bring you into my family. And I'll make you my friend. And I'll give you my inheritance, and you can sit at my table. But the thing that we're going to see in this text is if you refuse him like that, you will meet him as judge. If you refuse him as rescuer, you will meet him as judge. And he'll judge perfectly. We'll see that next week. But let's keep going. Who is this rider? He's faithful and true. And it says in verse 12, and on his head are many diadems. He has many crowns, countless crowns. Now, previously in Revelation, we saw that this enemy had some crowns. But Jesus has all the crowns at this point. That there's a real enemy at work in this world. And he wants to convince us of his power. And yet the real picture that we're seeing is that Jesus actually has all the power. He has all of the royalty. He has all of the omniscience. He has all the everything. No other kingdom at this moment is wearing a crown, showing Jesus how impressive they are. He's wearing them all. There's no brand or government or nation that's standing in this moment outside of Jesus. He's wearing all the crowns. It says in verse 16, on his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. This is who Jesus is. King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, the book of Revelation is being written to a people who are living in Rome, Roman citizens, under Roman law. And one of the things about Caesar, and the reason why John is banished onto the island of Patmos as he's writing this, is because John wouldn't bend his knee or bow his knee to Caesar as Lord. That Caesar demanded worship. He demanded allegiance. John wouldn't do it. And so Christians who wouldn't bow their knee to Caesar experienced some sort of punishment. And so what is so fascinating and epic about verse 16 is that John, in saying on his thigh, on his robe, he has a name, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, is John is writing back to the Romans, Caesar's not in charge, Jesus is. Caesar's not actually king, Jesus is. I see it. I see the future. I see what's going to happen. And in real time, Jesus is Lord over what we're going through right now as well. I've been to Rome. I've walked through the Roman, not the whole Roman Empire, right? 4 million steps, right? But like I've walked through Rome, and do you know what I walked through? Absolute rubble. Like I'm kicking rocks. I don't know if you're supposed to or not, but I'm like kicking rocks in Rome. And like I'm walking down, you know, all roads lead to Rome. I'm at that point, and I'm like, this is not that impressive. This kingdom is done. And you're selling trinkets to try and support Rome to keep going, even as a city and as a tourist attraction. Where's your empire, Caesar? You King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Where is it? It's rubble. Canada one day is going to be rubble. United States one day is going to be rubble. Argentina, China, Mongolia, rubble. But Jesus' kingdom is going to keep growing. He's King of Kings. He's Lord of Lords. And as King of Kings, he rides last. There's no one else riding at this point. There's no one else showcasing what a great president or prime minister or dictator they can be. And so what this tells us is that anything that we do for our glory can't last. Anything that you're living for in this life so that you're seeing the glory of your little empire, my goodness, I don't know how narcissistic you are, but your little kingdom is not going to be as big as Rome was. Guarantee. And if that can't last, your TikTok can't last either. Like, it's going down. And maybe someone's going to hack it. Maybe it's going to get bought out. Or maybe someone's going to realize the ridiculousness of it. But it's not going to stand. But the King of Kings and Lord of Lords is going to keep riding. Whatever we do for our glory can't last, but his will, his fame is going to last for eternity, and he's inviting you in as his friend. You get to be a friend of the king. You get to be invited to his table to dine and celebrate and feast with the king. This is such great news. It says in verse 15, from his mouth comes a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron. He will tread the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God, the Almighty. So he has a sharp sword that comes out of his mouth, and it's not some weird add-on feature. It's showing and demonstrating the power of his word, that by Jesus' word, all creation came into being, and by his word, he will judge all of his enemies in a moment. Now, nations is a key thing all throughout the book of Revelation. In chapter 12, verse 5, we saw that one is born to rule the nations, that being Jesus. Okay, he came for the nations. In chapter 17, verse 15, we see that there's one to deceive the nations. Nations is really on the table. This is what we have Jesus and this enemy going after, is the nations. But what we see in the book of Revelation over and over and over is that Jesus' people are from the nations. Chapter 7, verse 9 and 10, we see people from every tribe and tongue and nation and people group around the throne of God in the future losing their minds about Jesus, like freaking out in a very, un-us-like way. Like, we talk about these glorious truths, and we're like, yeah. We don't even say that. We're just like, right? I don't want to make too much noise. Like, but people around the throne of God are losing their minds over this right now. They're seeing Jesus face to face. They're seeing who he is. and they're worshiping, and they're falling down, and they're proclaiming his excellency, and they're in the presence of his full glory, enjoying him. Jesus is for the nations. He's for the nations. But we have an enemy that's against the nations, and we see here that the nations are being deceived, and we're not going to get into all this because we can't. But in verse 19, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth. If you want to know the beast and the false prophet, you can go back and listen to some of our previous sermons. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth with their armies gathered to make war against him who is sitting on the horse and against his army. Now, this is all of creation being deceived into thinking we can take Jesus. I remember being on a trip one time with my friend Mike. Some of you might know him, Mike Gockley. He is like former military. He's 6'5". He knows things that he probably shouldn't know about as a human being. And I'm like 5'7½", 5'8" on a good day. I'm feeling really tall, standing straight. And it was like we were talking theology until super late. Like 2 in the morning, I'm like, Mike, I wonder if I could take you. Because I wrestled in high school, so surely I should be able to take a 6'5 guy. And he just laughed and like looked down. I'm like, no, really? Like, do you want to wrestle? And he's like, no. And I'm so thankful he didn't, because I might not be standing here today. But it's that idea that creation is this like 5'7½, thinking they're someone because they did something one time, standing in front of Creator God saying, I think I can take you. And the enemy is deceiving them saying, yeah, I think you can. I think you can. Like, and if we all do it together, if we all come together, if we just give love a chance, if we just give unity a chance, if we just give John Lennon's song, Imagine There's No Heaven, a chance, garbage song of the universe, if we just give it a chance and we all come together, maybe we can take God out. That's what they're doing. And that's the enemy that's very active and alive and moving here as well. And look at what happens. You don't show up with a knife to a gunfight. The beast was captured. It doesn't even go into any detail of what happens. It just says, the beast was captured, with it the false prophet, who in its presence had done the signs by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped its image. Those two were thrown alive in a lake of fire that burns with sulfur, and the rest were slain by the sword that came from the mouth of him who was sitting on the horse, and all the birds were gorged with their flesh. That's a neat picture. The enemy already knows that he has been judged. He knows what's coming. He knows that there's eternal conscious torment for him. And so he wants to drag down as many as he possibly can. I don't know if you've seen the movie Jerry Maguire. I'm like going old movies today for some reason. I don't know where my mind is. But Jerry Maguire, he's a sports agent. He gets fired from his job because he has all these new ideas. And as he's leaving, he's like, who's coming with me? Who's coming with me? And he's trying to recruit anyone to go into his weird, you know, new thing. And then this woman, you know, leaves with him. But this is what the enemy is doing. The enemy is kind of like Jerry Maguire, even though Jerry Maguire is a hero in that film. I'm mixing all the metaphors this morning because it's St. Paddy's Day. So the enemy is saying, like, I'll bring as many people as I possibly can because I know I'm defeated. I know I'm defeated. And what we see here is that this rider, this one who comes, defeats everything. With a word, with a word. There's a song, A Mighty Fortress. Listen to this verse. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear, for God has willed his truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fell him. And that word above all earthly powers. And then it goes on to say, his kingdom is forever. A mighty fortress is our God. His kingdom is forever. This is the power that's at work in God's people. This is the one that we're riding behind, and we'll see that in just a moment. But this enemy, he's been leading people to war against God from the beginning. From the beginning of time, since he showed up with that blender manual. And if you're late, you're like, I missed something significant. Yeah, he did, right? There was no blender manual. But the enemy is leading people to war against God through deception and lies. And there's many versions of this, right? We already saw the first humans, Adam and Eve. God's holding out on you. God's holding out on you. Do life a different way. But there's many different ways that this enemy works. I would encourage you to read a fictional account, but it will feel very non-fictional. It's The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. It's extremely insightful in terms of how the enemy is at work. But he works with deception and lies. So let me just tell you a quick story about this guy that the Bible knows is a demoniac. He lived his life in a graveyard because he had what we come to find out is he had thousands of demons living in him. His family tried to control him. They tried to chain him down, not to punish him, but because they love him. They wanted him not to hurt himself anymore, but he would break through these chains, and he went and lived with his buddy in a graveyard. He would cut himself in the graveyard. He would scream out with pain, such mental, spiritual, emotional, physical anguish that he was going through, uncontrollable. And then one day, Jesus shows up, comes on this little tour on a boat with his disciples, and this demoniac runs at Jesus and says, "What do you have to do with us?" The demons are speaking through this man. And what Jesus does is he exorcises these demons. He gets them out of this man. And what ends up happening is that this man is sitting in his right mind clothed. He was naked, cutting, screaming, uncontrollable. Jesus shows up. He's now clothed in his right mind, talking to Jesus. Something significant happened when Jesus showed up. But what also happened was the demons said, "Don't judge us yet." They know. They know that what's coming is sure. They say, "Don't judge us yet. There's some pigs over there. Let us go into the pigs." So Jesus says, "Fine, go in the pigs." The demons lead the pigs off this cliff and Bacon gone. Like sad in one sense, right? Absolutely gone. But what happens is that those pigs are actually the economy, right? You heard about the bank in Silicon Valley that like just went belly up. How does that happen? Don't know. We're not going to debate that right now. But the idea is that all these companies and individuals all of a sudden are like, we don't know if we're getting that back. That's the same thing as pigs running off a cliff. And so the people in the city come out because they hear about what happened. They come out, they see the man clothed in his right mind, and they see the pigs like floating. You can't go down there. You can't get any of this back. They see that Jesus comes to town. He makes people who are out of their mind, in the right mind, clothed, and he sees that he destroys their economy. And they say to him, "Would you please leave? Would you please leave? Because if you stay here, you might ruin more of life for us." Jesus is saying, "But look what I can do. Why do you put all your hope in money and security? Why do you put all your hope in pigs? Why do you put all your hope in the bank? Why do you put all your hope in the promotion? Why do you put all your hope in this? Right? Look what I can do." And the enemy says he's going to destroy you if he sticks around. And so we so easily become like that city and we say, "Okay, Jesus, leave. I don't want you to destroy all my life. I've worked really hard at building it up. I've worked hard at my farm. I've worked hard at my accounts." But we've seen quite clearly over the past few weeks that even though you put your money in a safe place, it doesn't mean it's safe. Is that where your confidence is? The enemy will want you to be there. Your flesh will want to be there. But Jesus is saying, "Put all your confidence in me." Today, the enemy wants to lure you in through lies and deception. How? Well, let me give us a few examples. I don't know if you've ever read the Bible and you've come across something that you're like, "Oh, I don't know if that's true," or "I don't know if I like it. And you know what? I'm actually not going to believe that part." And you pull a Thomas Jefferson and you have a little Bible that you put together the way that you want. You take the things that you like that are in the Bible, you cut them out, you put them in your own Bible, and you're like, "I'll follow these things. The other things I'm not going to have." And I know people who are like that. We fight his word. If you fight his word, if you read something, you're like, "I know better," that's the enemy. You don't know better. If you believe that you've done something and you say, "Oh, I can't be loved by him because of that," that's the enemy. That's him, active, moving, whispering to you. "You're right, you can't be loved. You can't be loved. That was too bad." If you think that you have to earn God's acceptance, that's the enemy. If you think that you don't need the church because you have this killer one-on-one with Jesus, that's the enemy. The New Testament knows nothing of an individual Christian with an individualistic relationship with Jesus. Nothing. You can't find that there. You get to be part of a broken, messy church. That's what you get. You're going to show up to our Engage class. We're going to explain to you, and you'll be like, oh, this is an awesome church. You're like, yeah, just stick around for a few weeks, right? You'll see how not awesome we are. You'll see how boring and ordinary and messy we are. But that's the beauty, because you'll also see people who are being changed just like that demoniac was changed. You'll see people who are rebels against Jesus who are now following him. You'll see people who are addicts who are now free. You'll see people who are abusers no longer abusing. Like, there's freedom in Jesus. That's what you see in the church that you will not see anywhere else. You can't, because there's no power like that moving anywhere else in the world. There's an imitator that says, there's lots of power in the self-help section. Go find it there. Go carpe diem yourself. But you'll carpe diem yourself to death. You can't do it. Jesus has done it. There's freedom in him. Live as you want, alive from the enemy. And some of us say, oh, I just feel so much peace about this. That must be from God. Your peace is not the equilibrium for what you should be doing. It's not how we measure what we should be doing. Jesus said, I give my peace to you, not as the world gives you peace. The world gives us peace by looking at all of our stuff in the bank, our home, our investments, our 2.5 kids, our, you know, all that stuff. We're like, oh, okay, now I feel super secure. I feel peaceful. That's not how Jesus rolls. Jesus tells us to move into impossible things, things that we don't know how it's going to work out if he doesn't show up. And there is no peace for us other than his. I'm doing this and it doesn't feel peaceful. Most of my life and job is not peaceful. Most of it I don't have a good feeling about. We have neighbors and friends going through some really hard things right now. And yesterday, man, this is a huge answer to prayer. Yesterday, the husband invited me into their lives to begin speaking things about what they're going through. And yet, it's supremely awkward and hard to get there, right? And there's no possible way that I can get into conversation with them to speak about who Jesus is and what he does unless Jesus first shows up and opens that door. But most of life for followers of Jesus is awkward, strange, and impossible. The whole book of Revelation is getting to the point of you are my witnesses. You're the boring, ordinary, not so cool people who are sent out to show and tell of my beauty and my glory. That's his plan. You're his plan. You're like, no, person next to me. Nope, not that person, you. Us collectively. Don't make your decisions based on your little peace. Most of the decisions as a follower of Jesus are going to feel very unpeaceful. Lean into that. That's okay. I tell our leaders all the time, give awkwardness a big hug and go for it. Like, make uncomfort and conflict your best friend. Not that you're a person that goes after, like, causing conflict, but that you run after it to find resolution and reconciliation. You see, the enemy wants you to fight as insiders. He wants to make insiders. Church splits happen. Church splits shouldn't happen. But we so often listen to the voice of the enemy and listen to our flesh, and we want our way. If you don't put the communion table here, I'm leaving. Those are like real conversations I have. I'm like, all right, see ya. Like, if that's where you're going to leave, wait until we get to the real stuff. You'll definitely want to leave then. The enemy wants you to fight his insiders, but he's wrong. Know his lies. Know his lies. And how do we know the lies of the enemy? Well, we know what's true. Do you know how there are people whose job is to tell whether money is fake or not? Do you know how they train them to do that? They make them handle real money all the time. And so they're handling real money all the time. They feel the weight as if money has like a precise weight. It does. Like, they know everything about that. And then when you hand them something that's fake, immediately they know. Why? It feels weird. Feels strange. It feels off. And so when it feels off to them, do you know what they do? They take it through a whole series of experiments to look and dissect and figure out what's actually going on. That's the way that we should be examining what we hear. So this is not so cute of an illustration, but imagine that there was a cute little bird, right? And there's a little bird, and a bird can be a big nuisance in your house if you don't want it to be there. And so this little bird is like something that has intruded into your life. And so you somehow catch the bird, and you're like, I don't know who sent you. I don't know where you're from. I can't decipher clearly. So you take that bird, and you put it inside of a cage where you can examine it. This is what we should do when we hear things, or we might believe things, that we're not sure whether this is from God or whether this is from the enemy. And we look at this thing. Paul talks about it in Scripture. I take every thought captive. I take every little bird captive, and I put it in a bird cage, and I'm looking at it. And if it's from God, well, I want to let that thing free, and I want to enjoy it. But if that thing is from the enemy, I'm going to reach in, I'm going to grab it, and I'm going to tear its head off. All you bird owners, like, oh, you know, fake bird, pretend bird. But really what we should be doing with lies. We examine them. We examine them with Scripture. We ask other people. You can meet with a pastor. You can meet with someone in your change group, city group. But we examine it with people. We want to be fighting and putting to death sin and rejecting the lies that come into us from the enemy. Jesus came to conquer and to take back what's his. Jesus came to conquer and take back what is his. Another older movie, Taken. I skipped a Good Friday service. Yeah, someone knows. All right. I skipped a Good Friday service one year. It was before I was a pastor, okay? Normal, ordinary Christian inside my church. And I looked at Jess. We had just been married a little while. I said, I don't feel like going to Good Friday because this new movie, Taken, is out. And this guy has a very unique set of skills I want to see. And we were there. At the end of the movie, I'm weeping. And we're leaving, and I'm like, I'm so glad we came to this instead of going to Good Friday. She's like, aren't we going to go plant a church one day? Like, should you be saying that? I'm like, well, that was so beautiful. Like, that was such a wonderful demonstration of the gospel, because what happens is a father has a daughter, and the father tells the daughter how to live, and the daughter rejects him, and she goes off, and she gets herself trafficked, right? Her fault and not her fault at the same time. Victim, but also disobeying what would have brought her safety. And she gets caught up into this whole scheme. And at the end of the movie, there's some very large man on a yacht with his arm around her and a knife ready to kill her. And Liam Neeson has tracked her down, and he's got his little gun, you know, right on there. And as soon as the man moved to kill her, headshot, done. And this is the most beautiful part of the movie. She said, by the way, if you're like, you ruined it for me, it's been out for a long time. You should have seen it. It's your fault. It's on you, not on me, right? I am the bearer of good news, not bad news. Anyway, back to my point, okay? Stick with me. She's standing there, her captor on the ground. She looks at her dad and said, you came for me. And he said, I told you I would. This is what Jesus has done. You came for me, Jesus. I told you that I would. And he protects his people forever. In verse 14, we see the armies of heaven arrayed in fine linen, white and pure, were following him on white horses. We, his people, are with him. We're on white horses following the one who's going into battle. We're not going into battle. We're bystanders. We're watching what he does. And he never fights. He never gets off. He just speaks and defeat happens. And we're clothed in white. In verse 8 of Revelation 19, it says, the fine linen is the righteous deeds of the saints. Those righteous deeds are given to us by Jesus. We get to wear white because Jesus was righteous. So in a very real sense, we get to wear his jersey, right? We wear sports jerseys of our favorite people. I mean, kids dress up as their favorite Disney characters or whatever. We're associating with that person. And in a very real sense, we're getting to wear Jesus's jersey. We're getting his identity. Our identity is found in his word. And listen to this word in verse 13. He's clothed with a robe dipped in blood, and the name by which he's called is the word of God. That we have an enemy who's full of lies, but in this one, there is no lies. The one who sits on this rider has no lies. And his word declares, you know what it declares? His word declares our forgiveness. His word declares our new life. His word declares our new identity in Christ. His word declares that we're adopted and loved. His word declares that we belong. His word declares that we're with him forever. And his word declares that he's not going anywhere. There's nothing you can do to get rid of me. You're safe and secure. I told you I would come and get you. See, the word, this word, Jesus, the word came to shed his blood for his enemies. But he's coming a second time to shed the blood of his enemies. Came the first time, shed his blood for his enemies. He's coming the second time to shed blood of enemies. It says in verse 13, he's clothed with a robe dipped in blood. This is a picture of his full involvement in his sacrifice and judgment. Sacrifice and judgment. And he alone rides into battle for us. So we end our time with this incredible picture of who Jesus is. Like, scary. And yet, there's a lot of security in being behind Jesus. We get this double picture. Behind Jesus, there's a lot of comfort. In front of Jesus as judge, scary. Who is Jesus? Well, he's the King of Kings. He's the King of Kings. He's in charge. Who is Jesus? He's the victor. He wins, and he will win. But we ask the question, who is Jesus for you? All right, so we're going to apply it now. Who is Jesus for you? Is he a warrior? Or is Jesus a means to your end? Is he a warrior or is he a means to your end? Do you worship Jesus or do you use him? Do you worship Jesus? Is he in charge of your time and talent and treasure? Is he really king, which means that he can say anything he wants? And you're saying, okay, even if I don't understand it and don't have peace about it, I want in on that because that's what you want. Or do you use him? Okay, I'll follow you for these things, but not these things, Jesus. And you kind of try and make this weird pact with him that I'll take you as savior. You can rescue me and forgive me, but you don't get to be king over me. You don't get to tell me what to do. But he loves you so much that he's going to keep working. He's not going to keep that agreement, and he never made that agreement with you in the first place. Will you submit to him, or will you keep trying to manipulate him? You don't need to raise your hands, but how many of you try and manipulate Jesus in prayer? I do it all the time. I get caught all the time. Like, trying to think of a way, right? This is amazing. Eyes like a flame of fire. Focus omniscience. He knows everything. And I'm trying to quietly think of a way to ask him, kind of like a kid would ask their parents so that they can't say no. Mom, Dad, you know how you told me that it's really good that we love our neighbors? I really think you should probably let me love my neighbors by having a sleepover and eating sugar all night. You know, it's like manipulation, child. No, never sleepovers ever now. No sugar. You're banned. But it's that type of thing where we try and manipulate him into giving us what we want. I get caught all the time in it, and it's so good to be caught doing it. He says, okay, now really approach me. Just tell me that you want this thing for you. Just tell me that you want this thing for your control more than you want my control. Fine, I do. Okay, do you want to give that up? Yes, I do. I want to give it up. Help me give it up. That's real prayer. Will you let him out-wrestle you? Like, you see him and you say, all right, Jesus, I want to wrestle. He says, you know this is going to hurt. And you're like, I know, but I want it to hurt. I want the things in me that you don't want to be there anymore to be gone. So do it. Is it his terms or your terms? Because ultimately, he loves you so much that he's going to win every time. If you're here and you're not yet a follower of Jesus, this is going to sound really harsh, but there's no other way to say it. It's either going to be his blood or your blood. He offered it out for you. He said, take it, surrender. I already have the whole thing signed. And by the way, you get all of my stuff and you get me. Like, you get way more than you ever had before. Just surrender. Or it'll be your blood. And next week we'll look at this, but there's an eternal conscious torment. You were made for life, but instead you'll experience death forever. It's his sacrifice or your sacrifice. It's already done. Take it. And let me end with this question. What deception neutralizes you? What deception neutralizes you? And that might sound like an awkward question, so I'll share. Last week, I preached this in the South Shore in the West Island. So I had to, I'm like, well, I should probably have an answer to this, you know, even for myself. But I shared my answer, and maybe it'll be helpful. The deception that neutralizes me is I believe that God only loves me when I'm accomplishing things. And so I accomplish. Now, God's not opposed to accomplishing things. But I am very high on my accomplishing, you know, my task lists are long, and I want to get rid of them every day. And if at the end of the day, I feel like I haven't done what God wants me to do, or I haven't done, like, my share of the kingdom, that, like, oh, like, I don't really believe that God doesn't love me, but I feel that way, you know? It's like I just feel depressed, like, oh, I'm going to try harder tomorrow. And my theology says I don't believe that, but functionally I do. And it neutralizes me because all of a sudden I'm focused on me. It's about me, and like the ball didn't get moved forward down the field or the thing didn't get done. Therefore, how could Jesus ever move? I didn't return the 8 emails. How is his kingdom going to come? Jesus is like, hey, remember when I rose from the dead? Like, I don't need your return emails. Like I got this. It's on me. I'm using you because I love not using in a bad way, but I'll use you in the way that you get to accomplish this with me. But the things at the end of the day that show you that you're not God should, instead of neutralizing you, should lead you to worship me, saying, I need you to do all these things because I can't. Those of you who sleep, sleeping should be this beautiful act of worship. You put your head on the pillow and you say, I'm done. I can't do anything else. I'm going to worship you by checking out for as many hours as your body needs for sleep. Some of you are like, I need 3 days. That might be sloth. You might want to check into that. Or you might be dying. I don't know. But check into that too. But what deception neutralizes you? What keeps you from moving forward? And you begin to listen to the lies of the enemy. And if there's something regularly, like I just shared with you, that you're hearing or believing, speak that out today. Whether it's during our singing time that you're saying, I get neutralized by trying to accomplish for your kingdom. I believe those lies. Jesus, take those away. Right? When you speak things out, it's not some like weird mantra thing. But when those things get spoken out, I don't know if you've ever confessed something to your friend. And when you confess it, you're like, oh, or you've been caught in something and you get caught and you're like, oh, like murderers. Murderers, when they get caught, they'll say there's a relief to it. That they don't have to hide anymore. They don't have to run. It's like, yeah, but you're going to die. It's like, I know, but I don't have to hide this anymore. Let Jesus catch you. Be caught today. Speak that out and render powerless with the truth of Christ's victory. So I'm going to pray and then we'll respond. Jesus, thank you that you one day are coming back for this final victory. Thank you that you have already won. It's as good as done. John saw it and you are... You are in your time, which is going to be the perfect time, you're going to actualize that reality. Thank you that in a very strange way in this moment, we're already seated with you in the heavenly places. Thank you, Jesus, that you love us, that you are working in us, that you are working through us. And I pray against those deceptive things that so often neutralize us from being effective. I pray that we would hear what those are and that like that little bird, that they would get put to death today. That they wouldn't be able to fly in our lives anymore. And that we would have full knowledge that when they come again, we would say, no, I know what that bird is. And that we wouldn't let it in, that we wouldn't let it fly around and do its damage. Jesus, I pray for people who are here who don't yet know you, that this morning they would meet you as a rescuer. That they would submit to you and say, I need you. I need what you did on the cross for me. I can't do it. And I want your blood instead of mine. And that you would receive them. And I pray that we would respond in great celebration. We love you and really need you for everything. Amen.